Hello.
Welcome.
This is Friends
of the Two Cities.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Hello, loyal listeners. In this episode, we're going to continue our Halloween marathon of minis. We'll be sharing stories from several states, and the best part is you get to tell us which states you want to hear about. In this episode, I'll be sharing stories from New York and New Jersey. I'm going to start with New Jersey. In collecting stories for this marathon and doing research, this was probably the most terrifying story for me. While the New Jersey Devil may be one of the most prominent legends from Jersey, an actual happening has launched a new legend, something much more terrifying than a flying monster. In the summer of 2015, a young family moved into a million-dollar house in Westfield, New Jersey. Soon after moving in, the family began receiving letters signed by someone who became known as the Watcher. The Watcher claimed it was their duty to watch over the house, while simultaneously sharing strange messages like, "You need to fill the house with the young blood I requested," and even more blood-curdling, "Who has the bedrooms facing the street?" Derek and Maria Broadus, and Derek and Maria, if you're listening and I mispronounced that, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Purchased the six-bedroom home for $1.3 million in June of 2014. Within days, the family received their first letter from the Watcher. Two more letters arrived within the next few weeks. The letters asked about young blood, a reference to children, and the owners refused to move into their home. In June of 2015, a year after purchasing the home, the family filed a lawsuit against the prior owners, John and Andrea Woods. They claimed the Woodses did not warn of the stalker, despite having received a letter days before the sale of the home closed. And the Broadduses, again, if you're listening, let me know if I'm mispronouncing that, they cannot move into the home, and the letters have scared off potential buyers. A man was renting the home in February of this year, but claimed he was not concerned about the letters because it wasn't his issue. A fourth letter was sent to the home, but has not been shared publicly. The first letter explained that the Watcher's father and grandfather had also watched the house before him. He said it was now his turn. In the following letter, he referred to children as young blood, and then he said he would call the children to him once he learned their names. If that wasn't scary enough, another asked if they'd found what's in the walls yet. An article by Lauren Evans reveals that some in the neighborhood claim to know who the Watcher is. They say he's an adult son of a couple in the neighborhood who harasses everyone in the area. They're afraid to speak out because they believe he may actually retaliate, despite his parents believing he's harmless. There have been no suspects named or charges brought against the Watcher. Immediately calls to mind the film The Strangers. In one of the final scenes, the attackers, still in their masks, are asked the question, why, as their two victims are tied to chairs after a night of being stalked and chased. And the three people say calmly, "Because you were home." And that's the most terrifying idea to me. So now moving to New York. This is a story that has haunted me since watching the documentary by Joshua Zeman and Barbara Brancaccio. Again, Barbara, if I'm saying that wrong, let me know. They did the film on Cropsey. Okay, Cropsey was an urban legend that came to life in the form of Andre Rand. Cropsey was a legend, a creature that lurked at the edge of the woods, at playgrounds, and in your neighborhood. Described as an insane man with a hook hand, he terrorized boys and girls by dragging them into the ruins of the Seaview Hospital, an abandoned hospital on Staten Island. It was once a legend that parents shared with children, a means of getting them to stay put or get into bed. But in the 1970s, Cropsey became real. A local drifter named Andre Rand began attacking the children of Staten Island. Rand worked as a janitor at Willowbrook State School, an institution for the mentally disabled and specifically for children. It stood close to the abandoned Seaview Hospital. Willowbrook, during its 40 years of operation, mistreated the children there. Geraldo Rivera infamously revealed the conditions to the public in 1972. By 1987, the school was closed. The first child to go missing was 5-year-old Alice Pereira. If I'm saying that wrong, I apologize. Who disappeared in 1972 after playing with her brother. Then 7-year-old Holly Ann Hughes, who was last seen with Rand the day of her disappearance, went missing in 1981. The third was 11-year-old Teehees Jackson, who disappeared coincidentally right after Rand was released from prison in 1983. In 1984, Hake Gaforio, a 22-year-old with a low IQ score, was seen with Rand at a diner before going missing. And then finally, Jennifer Swiger went missing in 1987. The 12-year-old had Down syndrome. She told her parents she was going for a walk, but never came home. At this time, Rand was homeless and living in a series of campsites. One was in the woods behind Willowbrook State School. While searching near the school, a firefighter found a small foot and discovered the rest of Jennifer's body in a shallow grave. Rand's camp was found shortly after, and Rand was charged with murder. Rand had a record of crimes against children. In 1969, he was arrested for attempting to rape a young girl. In 1983, while working for a school bus company, he kidnapped 11 children to take them to lunch, then drove them to Newark Airport for no apparent reason. However, there's little evidence to link Rand to the murder of Jennifer. In 1988, he was convicted of kidnapping and sentenced to 25 years. The jury couldn't reach a verdict, so the murder charge fell. In 2004, Rand was put on trial for the 23-year-old case of Holly Ann Hughes. New evidence was presented, and the jury convicted him of kidnapping Holly Ann. The cases of Tahis, Alicia, and Hank remain unsolved, despite Rand being a prime suspect. None of the bodies have been found. Creepy stuff. Maybe the people in our neighborhood are really the monsters out there. So this is actually a continuation of our Halloween marathon of minis. We'll be back with more stories from different states. Thanks to Thrillist for their list, The Creepiest Urban Legend in Every State, which provided some of the info for this episode. And music for this episode is from Kevin MacLeod. The song is Cowmint.
Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. That can be accessed at creativecommons.org.
One more friendly reminder that we love to hear from you. So let us know what you think. Hit us up if you want your state featured, and let us know if you have experiences like this. We'd love to talk to you. Until next time.